when I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair.
Yes, he sees hair on his head and not on his shoulders, but of course he's deluding himself because he's a person of a certain age, as we all are. This is your host, Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, about aging, that word that dare not speak its name. And I am so thrilled we've just added a couple of more affiliates, so now we're on 34 stations. And we won the 2015 Mature Media Gold Award. That means we are the number one voice on radio for the mature adult. So this is just thrilling to me. And I just discovered great, great excitement that we're also up for the Gracies. And the Gracies, if you don't know, is named after the wonderful Gracie Allen. And it goes only to programs either created by or for women. And in some respects, we're both, but we are intergender. And I have to say that just by mentioning the word Gracie Allen, you think of George Burns. And if you are a devotee of a very particular impressionist, as soon as I tell you his name, you're going to know who I'm talking about. Then you know that basically there were two George Burnses, one Gracie's husband and the other one Rich Little, who imitated him. And I had the great pleasure of seeing Rich Little around Thanksgiving in Las Vegas, where his new digs are. Where I don't know if it's so new, but for me it was. I was surprised that he is a resident there because he hails from Canada. He's one of the great Canadian stars and impressionists and comedians, too, that we're seeing now everywhere. And I'm just so happy that he was willing to be on our show. I give you fair warning as a little bit of a cold, but this guy, if he's nothing else, he's a trooper. So thank you, Mr. Little. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Wow, I'm delighted to be on the show, Adrian. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, as I told you when we had our little pre-intro, the fact is that we are the voice of 78 million Americans, people who we call baby boomers, and also their parents. And the fact is nobody's in their rocking chair. Nobody's just waiting it out. And surely you are not either. So although you've been around for a very long time, you're an icon from the Johnny Carson show and so many other shows we're going to talk about, what are you doing now? I know what you're doing now is keeping you busy, and I think people would like to know and be inspired by it.
Well, I'm at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, and 5 nights a week, except Monday and Friday. And 7 o'clock show.
Yeah, 7 o'clock show, 5 nights a week, packing them in like clockwork. But there's another part of that, and that is that a lot of the lives of our listeners are spent as volunteers, and they have in their hearts some very important programs. Now, even at your presentation, you told us that some of the, and perhaps 100% of the merch, goes to special projects. Charities in which you're involved. You're involved in a lot of them. So let's hear about a few of them and what inspires you about them.
Well, all the money that we make when the show is over selling my my art, because, you know, I'm an artist, and a lot of my TV shows, and all that money goes to the Wounded Warriors and has been for some time, the Gary Sinise Foundation. And, you know, I've always been very involved, you know, in anything to do with the troops, because I don't think they're treated fairly. And, you know, and I never served, and I know what you go through, and I know, you know, what happens to a lot of servicemen, certainly in injuries and a lot of psychological problems. And, you know, and I have great compassion and great admiration for the people that put their lives on line for us, you know?
Yeah, and I certainly know that, and it comes through, and it's a wonderful thing. I will also say that many people don't actually know that Rich Little, great impressionist, is an artist. He's made hundreds and hundreds of drawings of very famous people. I bought one, and you might have been surprised.
Which one did you buy?
Well, Paul Lind, and let me tell you why.
We bought Paul Lind.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Well, I want you to do a little bit of him because you said, I bought him for my son who is 31 and loves Paul Lynde. But you
said that he didn't like your impressions. He never liked my impression, but he was a funny guy. I mean, he kept that show on the air for years, Paul Lynde, because you know, he could just come out with such funny lines at the drop of a hat. And you know, there's been so many over the years, and I tell a lot of them, but you know, I've got hundreds of them because when I did the show, and I did it a lot back in the 70s, I used to write down some of the better ones, and so I have quite a collection of them, you know.
What's your favorite Paul Lynde?
Well, you know, there's a number of them. I mean, some of them are stupid, some of them are kind of clever, but, you know, Peter Marshall would say, Paul, can you get an elephant drunk? And Paul said, well, yes, you can, but you'll never get it up to your apartment.
That is fantastic. Now,
you know, he had that special delivery of his, you know, and he was very identifiable. Everybody knew who he was.
Absolutely, and one of the great parts of Rich Little's show in Vegas is clips of Paul Lynde, clips of a lot of others. But the one that I think most dramatic, why maybe they call you the man of a thousand voices, is George Burns. Maybe you can bring him back for us a second.
Well, George Burns, you know, George was great. And he used to say to me, Rich, you know, you do me better than I do. So the next time I get paid for a show, I'm going to send you the money.
Well, I wonder if he did that. I would doubt that one. But that reminds me of you know who, Jack Benny.
Well, I've got a telegram from him at home. After I did him on a Dean Martin roast, he sent me a telegram. I've got it hanging in my living room. It says, "Dear Rich, I saw you on the Dean Martin show, and I don't know whether I'm you or you're me. It's amazing, but anyway, you were great." And then he signed it, George. No, he signed it, Rich.
He signed it, Rich. Well, you know, when you said he was going to send you the money, it reminded me of Jack Benny, because Jack Benny was always the one who would never part with a dime. And I would say you, for me, you do the greatest Benny, because it's not just the voice.
Well, Jack, you know, I mean, Jack Benny, you know, was a great friend, you know, of George Burns, and they used to put each other on all the time, you know. And it's true, they really did. They were always doing numbers on each other and trying to top one another. And I remember that famous story. There was a famous story where they were at somebody's home, and some opera singer was going to sing, and everybody was seated, and the room was quiet, and Jack was sitting in the front, and George was behind him, and George leaned over to Jack and said, you know, it'd be awful when she comes out if you started to laugh. It would be very embarrassing. And Jack turned around and gave him a look, and then the opera singer came out, took a bow, and Jack fell off the chair laughing.
Yep. Well, that was a setup that could not be missed, right? So before we take our break, I mean, very quickly, are there a lot of antics? I mean, you think about the Julie Andrews show, or you said the Dean Martin roast.
Yeah.
Is it all show business in front of the camera and serious behind the camera, or how was TV in those days?
Well, TV back in the 70s was terrific. I mean, that's where I got my exposure. I was on a different show almost every week. And, you know, the more TV you did, the more popular you became, because people knew who you were. You could go on the Ed Sullivan show, and if you did well, let's say, twice, you'd be recognized in the street because everybody watched the Ed Sullivan show. And then later, the Tonight Show, you know, that was another show that if you went on the Tonight Show, everybody knew who you were. But today it's a different bag because, you know, today there's so much on TV, and you know, people switch channels all the time, and so it doesn't have quite the impact that it did back in the 70s. You know,
that was a time of almost instant celebrity if you can get on the shows in the first place. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Rich Little, great impressionist, really an icon in the field of impressionism, but also an actor. And we're going to find out, how do you and how did he make his journey to get on those shows from Ottawa to the Ed Sullivan Show? And what do you think of some of those people? One of the questions I have, we'll talk about when we come back, is did Dean Martin really drink? Was Ed Sullivan really dumber than toast? I mean, these are the things that we hear about all the time. I'm going to put you on the spot, Rich, when we come back. And this is Adrienne Berg reminding you that this is Generation Bold. This is the Fountain of Truth. This is the holiday season, and take an inspiration from Rich Little. Get out there and help people. We'll be back in just a minute.
I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And it is the voice of the mature. What does it mean to be mature? Well, I really don't mean that you're not silly, because I know a lot of you guys out there, and believe me, you're not mature. What it simply means is you all remember. You remember the 60s, the 50s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. I hope you remember. Hope you remember the 2000s. The fact is, though, that we have a ball, and one of the most wonderful things has happened. Rich Little, the great impressionist, I don't even have to introduce you guys, you know exactly who I'm talking about, is on our show for this entire, what a holiday gift for all of my audience. But I'm going to go right back to you, Rich. Look, these are the icons of my, I won't even say youth, because I wasn't so young with Carson. I was a middle-aged person. But I have a lot of insider questions. Okay, holiday season, you would see Dean Martin. He was the only one who could get away singing a Christmas song, looking like he just had three bourbons. Was it true or not? Was that an act or not?
I would say out of the whole Rat Pack, probably Dean drank the least.
Really?
I'd say Frank and Sammy were pretty good. And Dean drank, of course, but he put it on a bit. He wasn't as drunk as I think he was. But it was a great hook for him, because when he screwed up, when he, you know, things went wrong, and they did all the time, he only was more popular because people, said, wow, you know, what, this is to be expected, you know, he's in the bag. And it really worked for him. And I never thought he was really that big a drinker.
In your act, I think you said he didn't read cue cards. He just kind of ad-libbed.
No, he never read cue cards. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
So he made it up as he went along.
As a matter of fact, he at times didn't even know who we were roasting. I remember one time we were walking to the dais at the MGM Grand, where we did most of the roast, and to start the show. And as we're walking to the dais, Dean turned to me and he said, Rich, who are we honoring tonight? And I said, you don't know? No, who are we doing? I said, Michael Landon. Oh, that's a good choice, yeah. Well, we're going to have some fun. In other words, he didn't really particularly care. If you were a person doing a show and you didn't even know who the guest was, that's pretty rare, you know.
That is pretty rare, but everybody said he was a very good father and a good businessman and a smart guy. But now we go to the other side of it. I have read this. I surely am not an insider, that Ed Sullivan, he made Elvis Presley, he made the Beatles, was just not a smart guy. What's your take on that? Because you were on the show.
Well, Ed, he didn't have a sense of humor. It was one of his big problems. And when people imitated him on the show, like I did, he would kind of chuckle and laugh a little bit, but it was put on because he really didn't like it. He didn't like it when people impersonated him, but he knew that the public were going to look at him for a reaction. He was a very strange man, Ed Sullivan. He ruled with a very strict hand. I mean, he didn't socialize with anybody, or he wasn't that pleasant. He was kind of a strange guy. But everybody watched him on Sunday night, and I think he got carried away with his own importance. And I can remember many times I would go through a routine and he'd say, "No, I don't like that. We're not doing that." And I would take it out, you know?
Yep.
And this would be about 5 minutes to 8. I'd have to come up with a whole new routine, you know?
Well, first of all, apparently you don't mess with Ed. And, of course, he was a journalist. And what a shock that a journalist would be full of themselves. Wow, that surely doesn't happen today. So.
Well, I remember one time he gave me 4 minutes for a routine, which is kind of not very long. And I had 4 minutes. And then he came to me a couple minutes before the show and said, "I'm cutting you down to 3 minutes. I said, "3 minutes? Well, I'm now down to 3 minutes? Ed, I don't think I can do my act at 3 minutes. What would I cut?" And he actually seriously said to me, "Well, take the impressions out."
That is the funny. That's a great line. Unbelievable.
Take the impressions out.
Yeah, well, because he didn't get it. Well, what can I say? He didn't get it. But you know, for your own journey, is pretty remarkable because you were DJ. I know you were a disc jockey.
Yes,
and you're from Canada now. That's a long trip. How did you get from Canada on American television?
Well, you know, back in those days, we're going back to '60s. You know. You had to apply for a green card and go through a lot of paperwork and wait 3 months. And then, you're accepted. And then I moved to the States. But, of course, today it's a lot different, you know. I think you can just walk down today. But, I decided that I would take a shot at the big time because Mel Torme, the singer who I became friends with, on a television show in Toronto, he talked to Judy Garland and got me on the Judy Garland show. So thanks to Mel, I got my green card and I drove down, as a matter of fact. And then after the Garland show, really things took off for me and I started doing a lot of television. I mean, a lot. And Garland show was the first show I did. Yeah.
Well, of course, there I do know that you did James Mason because she had just finished a great picture.
Was it
A Star Is Born with him? Yeah, and what a beautiful
Star is
voice.
Born, right.
Yeah, if you could give us a second of that. Can you still do James Mason? You probably haven't done him
James
in a long
Mason. Time. James Mason. Listen to me, Esther. A career is a curious thing. Talent isn't always enough. You need a sense of timing, an eye for seeing the turning point and recognizing the big chance when it comes along and grabbing it. You know, I mean, it was a great speech that he did from A Star Is Born. And I remember one time I ran into James Mason, and because of my impression of James Mason, that's what got me on the Garland show. And I went up to James Mason and I thanked him for getting me on the Garland show because I did an impression of him for Judy. And he looked at me, and he didn't know who I was. And I said, "I imitate you." And he said, "What on earth for?"
What on earth for? Fantastic. When we come back, I mean, look, there's no end to this. We can have a 10-hour show. But when we come back, I want to talk about Ronald Reagan. I want to talk about some of the work you're doing impersonating politicians. And you're very, very sharp, cutting edge. And I also want to talk about the mechanics of being an impressionist. And the difference between impressionism and mimicking, which is a whole other world. I'm just fascinated by that and how long you really have to practice. So we'll be back in a few minutes. I want to tell the world that this is Generation Bold. This is Adrian Berg, host of The Fountain of Truth, the only show that lets you look in the mirror and smile at the ring.
Not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my... You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And we sure are inappropriate for our age. I don't even know what being appropriate is anymore. In a couple of years, I will be 70, and I'm going to wear a T-shirt saying, "This is what 70 looks like. Deal with it." But that little inappropriate, folks, I want to remind you, we have a wonderful, wonderful website, GenerationBoldRadio.com, GenerationBoldRadio.com, and the entire 10-minute musical written for us by a lyricist and a composer from Broadway is on there. It's called Inappropriate for My Age. You'll love to meet the men, the women, and grandma. But right now we're speaking with somebody who I don't even want to take an extra minute to talk about anything but him, and that is Rich Little. I could not wait to see him in Las Vegas. It was better than I ever thought that I was going to see. He packs them in. He's got a little bit of a cold today, and yet he's been doing incredible impressions. So, Rich, thank you for staying on with us. And before we go any further, two things. A, tell everybody where you are in Las Vegas. B, you surprised me, a good surprise. A book is coming out. So tell everybody about both.
Well, I'm appearing at the Tropicana Hotel, and which is on the Strip, you know, across from the MGM. And I'm in the Laugh Factory because there's comedians before. No, there's comedians after me, two shows after me. I'm on 7 o'clock, and I do an hour, and I'm there every night but Monday and Friday. And having a ball, enjoying it, and the audiences have been just terrific. And it's really, my show is really a trip down memory lane. I mean, it's pure nostalgia. And, you know, if you're a young person, I don't think you get too much out of the show. Although I must tell you a funny thing that happened a couple of weeks ago. I had a 15-year-old kid down front, and I thought, oh, boy, I wonder if he knows anybody I'm imitating. And he was laughing. And when the show was over, I saw him out front, and I said, what did you think? And he said, oh, you were funny. Oh, that was a great show. I said, well, thank you very much. He said, can I ask you something, though? And I said, sure, of course, anything. He said, why do you keep changing your voice all the time?
That is great. But I will tell
this
you,
really
though.
This really happened. Isn't that funny?
I do believe it. I know.
Your voice. He didn't know who I was doing.
But it was funny. Because the people you knew are
funny,
and you're doing their jokes. So if George Burns is funny, then you're funny. It's exactly true.
Yeah, well,
but
if you don't know the people I'm doing, you just have to hopefully appreciate the humor, you know, because there are a lot of younger people who don't know who Dean Martin is. They don't even know who Sinatra is, you know. So, you know, it becomes tougher as you get older. So you have to appeal to people that grew up when I grew up, you know, back in the in the 50s and the 60s, you know.
Sure, like our audience. But I will say, and very quickly, I have a 24-year-old daughter and a 34-year-old son. They both know every single person that, as well as they know you. Because of late night television.
Well, that's great.
You know, there's old time TV on, so there are young people who know. But the fact is, I wanted to get to the politicians, but you did twice mention the magic word Sinatra, and it is the 100th anniversary. Again, I know that you had dealings with the Rat Pack. I know that you did all of them. Was he a tough guy?
Frank was very nice to me. I can't say anything bad about him. I never saw him fly off the handle. Of course, we know he did many, many times. He was a man of many moods. And if you got him in a good mood, he was the nicest, sweetest, kindest, gentlest man you ever met in your life. But when he was in a bad mood, you better not be around. And one of the things that I had going for me with Frank was I could make him laugh. And if you could make Frank laugh like Dean Martin did and Don Rickles did, Red Buttons did, Charlie Callis did, Foster Brooks did, you know, you were accepted into a circle. And I could make him laugh. And the first time I made him laugh was down in Palm Springs. This was about 1974, I think. And I was doing a benefit for Gerald Ford, President Ford. And Frank was on the show, and I was, you know, did 5 or 6 minutes. And I came out on stage, and I noticed that Frank was standing against the wall in the back, and Gerald Ford and Betty Ford were right in front of me, way below me, high stage. And I was doing my act, and I started doing impersonations of politicians, and I had a podium made out of cork.
Yes.
And everybody thought it was wood. It looked like it was a wooden podium, but it was made out of cork. And the idea was that I would trip as Gerald Ford and hit the podium, and it would break in half, which mm-hmm. I'd done many times, and it got a huge laugh because Gerald Ford was a bit of a stumble bump.
Right.
And there he was right in front of me. Frank was leaning against the wall, and because Gerald Ford was right in front of me, I overdid it and hit the podium, and cork went in the air like rain. And it just and then I lost my balance. I grabbed the microphone, fell off the stage, fell in Gerald Ford's lap. Okay? The audience thought I killed him. The audience thought I killed him.
Right.
I wanted to see if I knocked him out, but I didn't. I landed in his lap with the microphone in my hand, and I held it up to his mouth, and he said, "Whoops." And Frank lost it. Frank was pounding on the floor in hysterics, and the audience went crazy because it looked like Edgar Bergen, the Mortimer Snurd, you know, sitting in his lap, and the president had cork on his head for the rest of the evening. It was a very funny moment.
Did anybody think it was planned?
No.
They knew that
really,
was why it was funnier.
No, that was too far a fall.
Right.
And
right.
I thought, you know, oh, this is it. I'm going to be deported back to Canada. This is the end of my career. I've killed the president of the United States. But luckily, I must have landed right because I didn't hurt him at all.
Were you hurt?
And I wasn't hurt. No. No, I wasn't
hurt. Because
you
landed on Gerald Ford.
You see, things become funny like that if they know you're not hurt. You know,
right.
It's like the big fat lady falls on the ice. Well, you know, if she isn't hurt, everybody laughs. If she's
right.
hurt, it's a different story. So, you know, it worked out fine. And I became a friend of Sinatra's after that. That really got me in with him because he laughed till he was crying. You see, he was screaming, you know.
Right,
and,
right. So he was a guy who could let himself go in public in that way.
Oh,
which
yeah,
is, which
yeah.
Which is an interesting insight.
He did like people that made him laugh, you know.
So we went from Sinatra to a president. Let's go to another president. We have a couple more minutes. I really love the Reagan story. Tell everybody the Reagan story.
Well, you know, which Reagan story?
The one where you
so
imitated
many.
Him, yeah, you know, at press conferences and how he
oh,
felt.
Oh, well, yes,
Europe,
yes,
yeah.
yes. That's right. Well, I tell that in my show. I was standing on the White House lawn while he gave a press conference, and he got bored, and he let me finish the press conference. And he walked away and hid behind a tree to see what I was going to do. And I finished the press conference as Ronald Reagan. And, you know, the press were firing questions at me. And I first thought, I'm way over my head here. What the hell am I going to do? You know, and then
right.
I just got lucky with a couple of answers, you know. And they were yelling out things like, Mr. President, with all the unrest in the Middle East, will you be sending jets to Israel? And I said, no. What the hell would they do with a bunch of football players? No, I think the jets should stay in New York and just continue playing hockey. You know, I mean, stupid
good.
Things.
Right.
Stupid things.
Now, did you think that this is what was going to happen when you went from Canada to the U.S., that you'd be meeting the president and being an impressionist of the greatest
no,
star?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, not at all. Because I was such a movie buff when I was a teenager. You know, the movies really started me doing impersonations. I wanted to be the people I saw on the screen. And so I had my idols like Jack Benny and John Wayne and George Burns and, you know, all these wonderful people that I admired. I never dreamed that within 10 years I'd be working with them and getting to know them. I mean, it was beyond belief. It was something that I never anticipated at all.
So, to become
friends with Jimmy Stewart and all these wonderful, wonderful people was probably the biggest thrill of my life.
So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the albums, and we'll talk about what it means to be an impressionist and how you really do it, the mechanics. I won't let you go on that one because I'm fascinated by it. And we'll be back in just a moment with Generation Bones, so the managers don't you go anywhere.
I am happy, and I freely admit, for my age.
And hello, 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 and this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Now, if you are just tuning in, you are hearing the last segment we have with the great Rich Little, iconic personality and impressionist. So, when you hear this, you're going to be sorry that you didn't hear the first three segments. And don't worry about it. You can go to generationboldradio.com. and hear his stories about everyone from Frank Sinatra to Gerald Ford to Dean Martin and many, many more. So just go to the archive section of our website, generationboldradio.com. Now, Rich, of course, you're at the Tropicana 5 nights a week in the great city of Las Vegas. But there's also good news, and that is you have written a book, and it's coming out. It's not out yet. Could you just tell us about it so that we can anticipate? I'm sure it'll be on Amazon and the bookstores, but give us a clue about this book.
Well, it's not a biography, really. I do talk about my early childhood growing up in Canada, but it's mostly a book about all the funny things that happened, with the people that I impersonated. And the book is called Little by Little, People I Have Known and Been.
Wow. Wonderful. So
and,
I'm excited.
I've been working on it for 20 years. The problem with it is, about every 6 months I read what I've written and, hey, I can improve that, so I rewrite it. So I've rewritten it about 15 times. But, I got my daughter's approval on it, and that's very important. She would tell me right off, Dad, this isn't very good. Or
right.
She always says to me, Rich, that impression stinks. Take that out, And I listen to her, because a lot of friends and people will tell you how wonderful you are and everything is. All the impressions you do are great, but you want honesty is what you want. And my daughter's like that, and I love her for it, She's just terrific, and we have a great relationship. The book is, I think it's interesting because it sort of shows you how human a lot of these people are, especially Reagan and people that we admired and the funny things that have happened. My God, so many funny things have happened by imitating people, And that's all in this book.
Yeah, I know in your show you say one of your favorite people is Jimmy Stewart. Am I right about that?
That's
tell us, why
true.
Is that? But you don't mention why you imitated
the thing about Jimmy the thing about Jimmy was that Jimmy was probably the most imitated person back because all the people just had to talk wild, Jerry Wild, Jimmy Stewart. They just had a kind of do it like that, but the subtleties are the things to get with Jimmy Stewart. Jim would talk down like this, and he said to me one time, he said, Rich, I wish you were around when I was dubbing the movies, and you could have done that for me, and then I could have made more films. He said, I talk so damn slow. I remember one time I was halfway through making a movie and I found out they'd already finished the sequel.
That's great. So these people were charming and they were also great actors, and they had personalities, faces, and they had traits. And that's my question to you about an impressionist. It's not just the voice. How much of it do you practice just their hand movements and their facial movements? Do you practice at all? Does it come to you?
Certain, certain people I can look a little like Johnny Carson or Jack Benny. It's tough to look like Orson Welles or Raymond Burr, but you have to use your imagination. And actually, to tell you the truth, I probably was better on radio, because on radio it was all imagination, you know. And I can remember, when I started doing impressions on radio, people would say to me, "Oh my God, you looked exactly like him."
Right. So that's when you were disc jockey. But did you is it hours and hours of work, or does this something like being an artist where you just have the ear and it happens?
Well, one of the advantages I have is I can hear it when I do it. I can, when I'm doing it on stage, I can hear it, so I can say, "Oh, that's not very good," or I can improve that, or that's too high, or that's too low. And most people can't hear themselves. That's why when they put their voices on a tape for the first time, most people will go, "That doesn't sound like me."
Right.
Something wrong with the machine. Do I really sound that nasal? You know, people do that. And you have to be able to hear it. That's the key.
And for folks, if you don't know, that's a very unusual thing. I've been on the radio since 1988, and I don't know what I sound like. When I hear it, it's very, very strange. And I say, "Ugh, who's going to listen to that?" And most people I know really are like that. But so that's really an attribute, an amazing attribute. In terms of the my favorite show, I have to mention it. A lot of people may not have heard of it. It was called Copycats. And I remember Frank Borshin and Marilyn Michaels. And that's what I wanted to ask in this last minute. You know, we've got women running for president, and we really have very few people except Tina Fey, you know, trying to do impressions of women.
Yeah.
There are very few women impressions. You do some great ones, actually. But
well,
very
I do Katharine Hepburn, and I do Katharine Hepburn and Jean Stapleton, and I do... you know, a couple more. Carol Channing, of course.
Yes.
But, most of the impersonators now are on the, Saturday Night Live, I think.
Right.
You know, is where you see most of the impersonators. But we don't have as many as we used to, that's for sure.
It is true.
There used to be a lot more.
There was, and again, probably because we are such a self-aggrandizing group, we have to put our own cats on Facebook and our face on Facebook, and we're not watching anybody else to even know that somebody is doing them well. But you certainly did, and you started a whole genre that may come back, but if any of you are really longing for that genre, and it's an amazingly funny one, go to the Tropicana in Las Vegas. You can't miss. And then we're going to read Little by Little by Rich Little.
Well, as you know, when you see the show, you see three parts of Rich Little, the impressions, my art, all my sketches, and then all the film clips of different shows that I've done down through the years. So it's a complete show on Rich Little, and it's fun to do, and I hope people will come and see it. And
well,
I've had a ball. Thank you so much.
I had a ball, too, and so did all the listeners. Take care and happy holidays.
Great fun.
Thank you.